This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:05 in the evening, and our first story of the day is an update of sorts to the smoking ban.
So while the rest of the country is still in the early days of smoking bans in eateries, there are plans to make the entire state of Penang a smoke-free area over the next 5 years.
So this is according to Dr. Afif Bahardin, who is the State Health, Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry and Rural Development Committee Chairman. That's a bit of a mouthful. This initiative would be implemented through the Smoke-Free Penang or PenBar program, aimed at protecting people from the dangers of cigarette smoke.
The plan here is for the state government to work with the health department to ensure that this plan is implemented successfully, with more public awareness programs being organized and on the smoking ban in public areas and recreational parks.
This, by the way, was announced at a press conference that was held in collaboration with the Nasi Kandar Pelita restaurant chains, with those restaurants now announcing that cigarettes will no longer be sold on their premises.
Dr. Afif said the PenBar program started with the 2012 gazetting of 6 public recreational parks in the state as non-smoking areas: the Ai Itam Dam Municipal Park, Botanical Garden, Telok Bahang Dam, Ampang Jaja Town Park, and Mengkuang Dam. He said this was followed by the gazetting of the Georgetown World Heritage Site as a non-smoking area in 2015.
Have you actually been to Georgetown, or rather the area that they're describing here, ever since it was declared?
Not recently.
Right, because I have, and it is actually, I have, and I went with a smoker, and it really is quite impressive, actually, how they've really kind of segmented it off. You have to stand within a small circle that's, I don't know, about a meter in diameter, and you just kind of stand there and smoke, and then you move on. And those are the only areas in which you can smoke. And so it is quite a strictly enforced thing up in Penang. And so when I hear that they're thinking about making it sort of statewide, I feel as if they might have it in them to do it.
Wait, when you say circle, do they just have tape on the ground? And
yeah, if I recall correctly, I wasn't paying that much attention because I wasn't the one, kind of needing a smoke. But we were looking around for it. And yeah, it's just a very small little circle on the floor,
drawn in by marker.
I think with paint, okay. But still, that, and with signage up basically saying, yeah, this is the smoking area, and it's not a large area at all. And an example that perhaps we could look to is Queensland, which has imposed some of the toughest smoking bans in Australia, as this clip from 7 News illustrates.
Queensland's anti-smoking laws are being shaken up. From the 1st of September, lighting up will be banned near children's sporting events and skate parks, in early childhood centres, and residential aged care facilities outside designated areas. People will also be protected from secondhand smoke at outdoor pedestrian malls, certain national parks, public swimming pools, as well as bus stops and train stations.
These are the toughest smoking laws now in Queensland and in Australia.
A 4-metre smoke-free buffer at government and commercial building entrances will increase to 5 metres, and cigarettes will no longer be sold from pop-up stalls.
I think it's a very nice thing what they do regarding the smoke.
The number of Queenslanders who smoke has declined by 50,000 in just 12 months, but 3,700 people still die from the habit each year, and 1 in 10 of those deaths are from secondhand smoke.
That's why it's just so wonderful that these laws are going to extend the smoke-free areas in Queensland, so we'll have less and less people being exposed to passive smoking.
Enforcement will mostly fall on local government.
Councils right across the state, if they're going to enforce such wide-ranging laws, are going to need support and resources from the state government in order to make it happen.
On-the-spot fines cost $236 as Queensland moves closer to a smoke-free future.
Dr. Afif acknowledged that there were some challenges in implementing such a comprehensive ban, but the committee he chairs is looking at ways to overcome them, saying this ban would need to take into account several factors, including designation of special areas for smoking.
So expect more of those circles to pop up around the state, I guess. I, like I said, I'm interested in seeing how they do this, in particular because the Georgetown Heritage Site has already achieved this. And so if you can start from smaller areas and then build up, I think that is always the tricky thing, right? Every time we talk about new plans that are being put forth by the government, we're always, you know, inundated with the same questions, which is enforcement. How is it going to work out? Have they really thought it through? Is it going to scale? Have they taken all these considerations into account? So if you think that, okay, fine, they've started with this area and perhaps they've worked out some of the kinks and now they're ready to extend it statewide, like I said, I'm sure it's not the same, you know, and Dr. Afif seems to be acknowledging that difficulty also, but it's promising.
I wonder why other states haven't quite started it yet, despite, you know, I guess the economic incentives might be too much from the tobacco tax, perhaps.
Perhaps so. But I also think Georgetown has a tourism incentive there because, you know, it is a heritage site. So perhaps it was spurred on by that, by the idea that, hey, we've got to safeguard this area. There are lots of tourists. Perhaps, you know, it might have been driven by that, but now it's going to go statewide. So, yeah, I mean, we'll wait to see. Let us know whether this is something that you think would work here in the Klang Valley. Is it something that you would like to see in place, this sort of, you know, statewide smoking ban where it extends beyond eateries but into other spaces? You can WhatsApp us or text us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. And our next story comes from Indonesia, but I think it pretty neatly applies to a Malaysian context as well.
Clean up, everybody clean up, clean up. Everybody clean up, clean up. Everybody clean up, time to clean up.
So KFC Indonesia recently launched a social media campaign called Budaya Beberes, which when roughly translated means clean up after yourself culture.
Basically, they're encouraging you to clean up the table after you're done eating, and it's getting mixed reactions. I'm going to read out what was written in the post. Since we were little, we have been taught to always clean up after ourselves after we eat. However, as time goes by, this culture has become rarer. Let's start this culture again. From now on, let's start to clean up after ourselves after we eat. The post has since received more than 590 comments and 1,300 likes and has been shared more than 1,800 times.
So some netizens have voiced their unhappiness about this. A Twitter user reasoned that her intention when eating outside is to avoid cleaning up, saying, what's the point of buying chicken outside if I still have to do the cleaning? I'd better just eat at home. And there are cleaning service attendants who will do these jobs.
One netizen commented that the restaurant should just move to developed countries rather than using culture as an excuse to raise revenue, which was replied by the admin of KFC Indonesia that, well, KFC hails from a developed country.
The restaurant shared that it didn't expect the campaign to receive such a mixed response, particularly on Facebook, tweeting that, hey, we posted Budaya Beberes on Instagram and Twitter too, but it went viral on Facebook. We were surprised that it went viral. Similar to the No Straw Movement campaign, this one is also an invitation from us to act positively.
So not all the comments were negative. Many of the franchise's customers could be found praising the move on social media. One user on Instagram said, yay, finally KFC acknowledged this issue. People used to look at me weird whenever I cleaned my table and threw away trash after eating at KFC, despite it being a positive thing to do.
On Facebook, a user named Marvel Sutantio praised KFC for spreading the campaign, saying, do not get discouraged and do not listen to the negative responses. Such a habit of independence and responsibility should be campaigned for. Thank you for the reminder. In developed countries like Singapore, Japan and others, cleaning services are available, but the people are also aware to clean up after themselves. Why? Due to responsibility, appreciation and the spirit of helping one another. So the reason why we said that this would translate easily is because I think this is a similar problem here, actually.
Yeah, I think the most obvious place for me is probably in IKEA, where they've always had like a self-service thing going on, no matter where they open up a franchise or a store. But for some reason here, they've had to hire cleaning staff because they found that Malaysians just weren't cleaning their tables after they were done eating.
I think you can go to any fast food restaurant and see that there is a pretty mixed bag of people and reactions in terms of cleaning up. I think some people have the assumption that we shared earlier from that one Indonesian Twitter saying that, yeah, you know, I am in a restaurant. I'm not expected to do the dishes. You guys can clean up. But I've always cleaned up in fast food restaurants, just because, I mean, it's a shared space. You're not exactly surrounded by waiters and waitresses who are prepared to take away your trays. And also, it's hardly a walk. You're just picking up your tray, dumping it and leaving. It's really not that hard.
That depends. I think I only started doing this in my late teens, but my mom, when she took me out to these places to eat, she'd be like, hey, why are you, you know, what, we don't have to clean up, just leave it for the staff to do it. It's their job. And I think that idea and that rhetoric and that statement probably is echoed by many other Malaysians too.
I think so. I mean, do you clean up in fast food restaurants? We would like to hear from you. Would you support a campaign like this, suggesting that we should be the ones to clean up after ourselves? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, and you can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, this could be a matter of habit and a sense of civic responsibility of the country as a whole, but we did think it would be interesting to find out which cities around the world are known for being clean and what their attitude is towards how they treat their trash.
A 2012 Green City Index reported by the Economist Intelligence Unit examined each major world region to determine which global factors contribute to cleanliness. In Europe, many of the top spots were captured by Nordic countries, with Copenhagen in Denmark as the cleanest city overall. Zurich in Switzerland also received high points for lowest CO2 emissions. Both countries have strict limits on high-polluting vehicles, but there is also a societal push to use public transit, bicycling, and walking. Even the 2009 Copenhagen Accord saw the world's major economies come together for the first time to lower global emissions. In Latin America, a clear and repeat winner for the cleanest city has been Curitiba in Brazil. The city was the first to introduce bus rapid transit in 1974 and has continued the trend of working with its citizens to provide environmental benefits. A recycling program called Garbage, that's not garbage, has led to about 3/4 of the city's trash to be recycled by residents. Other programs, like one which trades bus tokens for recycling, shows how effective communal and governmental efforts can be. Another top recycler, this time in Asia, is the city-state of Singapore. On average, they generate less trash per person than the rest of the continent, but they also keep the city clean through high-density planning and infrastructure investment. Recycling and water treatment plants are state-of-the-art and designed around supplying the uniquely compact city. With so many people living so close together, it is very important to produce as little waste as possible. Over in North America, it's health-conscious San Francisco that takes the lead. According to the GCI, San Francisco recycles as much as 77% of their waste, which is more than any European city besides Leipzig in Germany. Another reason is that SF requires commercial building owners to submit regular energy usage reports, leading to considerably lower usage overall. This, coupled with a high sharing economy, high quality public transit, and marginal environmental tax benefits, makes SF incredibly clean. Lastly, and unfortunately, no cities score well above average in Africa. The highest ranked, Accra in Ghana, is not necessarily the cleanest, but they get major points for having a direct bureaucratic link with the national government concerning the environment. This helps not only in monitoring, but also action, and is found lacking in most African cities profiled. Overall, the most consistent aspect of environmental friendliness seemed to be based on society's willingness to take part. Mass transit and recycling help bring down emissions, as does efficient city planning and government policy, but it should come as no surprise that without the support of the people, there is little that can be done to save the earth.
So bringing it back not to saving the earth, but just to cleaning you up after yourself in fast food restaurants, is that something that you do? Is that something you encourage others to do? Or are you of the mindset that, hey, I'm eating out, you know, and the restaurant, it's the restaurant's responsibility to clean up? Let us know. WhatsApp us or text us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back to talk about how it might be Spotify's fault that all these songs are getting shorter and shorter. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Building Fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Just briefly, we were talking earlier about how Penang is looking into implementing a statewide smoking ban. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that that might work in somewhere like the Klang Valley? We also want to know, do you clean up after yourselves in fast food restaurants? Because, of course, KFC Indonesia released a campaign suggesting that you do, and it was met with mixed reactions. Some people saying, yes, great idea. Others saying, hey, you know, I don't eat out to have to clean up after myself. Either way, you can let us know. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a message here saying, absolutely, we should clean up after ourselves, especially when we leave an unholy mess, as many do at fast food chains. I think a lot of people suddenly feel very artistic when confronted with chili sauce. I've noticed this. I don't know what happens.
I think, you know, cleaning up really helps with the whole restaurant being called a fast food restaurant, because then you wouldn't have to wait for staff to help clean the table. Because if you had already cleaned it, or the person before using the desk had cleaned it, it would be, you know, it'd be easier for you to just sit down and eat.
Yeah, it's just part of being considerate to everybody. I don't know why that's, you know, a bit of a struggle sometimes. Ravi says, I do this always. Perhaps if more people did this, they would be aware of their surroundings and wouldn't mess up as much. It reflects how we respect others as well. Being considerate is important. Sid on the smoking ban says, no doubt it will help public health, but I think the most pressing issue in Malaysian eateries is a lack of hygiene among staff. Just watch them when they come out of the toilet to see none of them wash their hands. Malaysian eateries are the main hub of spreading diseases like the flu. I try not to look at the toilet, honestly, when I go to eateries, partly for this, partly just because the amount of people in general who don't wash their hands is a bit, you know, kind of troubling.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's so gross. I think a lot of men don't wash their hands after they leave. I just see them use the urinal and then they step out.
Yeah, so this is why I just kind of try to ignore the whole idea of the toilet unless it's something that I require. But you can keep those messages coming. Let us know, do you clean up after yourself at fast food restaurants? Would you support a statewide smoking ban? That number to text or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Our next story, meanwhile, comes from Quartz, and it's all about how the economics of streaming might be making songs shorter.
It goes on forever, 6 bloody minutes.
I pity your wife if you think 6 minutes is forever. And you know what? We're going to release it as our single.
Not possible. Anything over 3 minutes and the radio stations won't program it.
So popular music is shrinking. From 2013 to 2018, the average song on the Billboard Hot 100 fell from 3 minutes and 50 seconds to about 3 minutes and 30 seconds. 6% of hit songs were 2 minutes and 30 seconds or shorter in 2018, up from just 1% 5 years before.
So take Kendrick Lamar, for instance, one of the world's most popular musicians at the moment. The average track length on his breakout 2013 album was 5 minutes and 37 seconds. All of them were 3 minutes, 30 seconds or longer. But on his most recent album, Damn, the average song was 3 minutes and 57 seconds. And, you know, that album, by the way, won the Pulitzer Prize for Music, which goes to show you that, yes, there is a difference in length that we're talking about, but this trend isn't necessarily lowering the quality.
It's not just Kendrick. The trend can be seen in albums of music's greatest stars, like the rapper and singer Drake, perhaps pop music's most dominant force, whose albums are getting longer as his songs are getting shorter. And it's not just popular rappers. Country songs are shrinking too. Eric Church and Jason Aldean have been nearly constant with the number of songs on each of their albums, but their songs keep getting shorter and shorter.
So the idea here, I guess, is that songs are getting so much shorter perhaps because of streaming services such as Spotify and Apple Music. Payments from these services make up 97% of all US music revenues in 2018, and they pay music rights holders per play. Spotify doesn't say the exact amount it pays for each stream, but reports suggest it is somewhere between 0.004 cents and 0.008 cents. And every song gets paid the same. So you have Kanye West's 2010 5-minute opus, All of the Lights, and that will get him the same amount of money as his 2-minute-long 2018 hit, I Love It.
So stuffing more diminutive songs into an album is simply more remunerative than having a bunch of long ones. Still, it's hard to pinpoint exactly how much streaming has contributed to the recent shortening of songs. The length of pop songs had already been falling through the 1990s before accelerating in recent years. Some music industry observers blame shortening attention spans, but there isn't much rigorous evidence that our ability to focus has changed.
Others say it's just that songs need to be more compact and catchy in order to stand out, but music has always changed with technology. I mean, early phonographs could only hold about 2 to 3 minutes of music, so as a result, that was the length of the typical song from the 1920s to the 1950s. Then you have the introduction of the LP, and then the tape and the CD, making it possible to have longer songs with each medium's larger storage capacity.
Now, in the age of streaming, technology and economics seem to be sending us back towards brevity. In this episode of Geek Squawks from April last year, Richard Bradbury and Matt Armitage mulled over exactly how music has had to adapt and how artists have had to as well.
First of all, I worked for, you may remember this company from the UK, they were called Owl Price, and they were a high street retailer. They sold CDs and whatever. And the CD market was quickly almost overtaken by DVDs. That became the big thing. People stopped buying CDs, they moved to DVDs. And then within just a few short years, our price was closed down. HMV, which was the biggest retailer for music, was, you know, flagging and having real problems as well. And then when something like Spotify came along, you know, the people like me who had these huge CD collections and have been collecting them for however many years, suddenly found my entire CD collection online, available for a very small amount of money at the click of a button.
Oh, absolutely. And it has changed the way that everything is structured for artists, in terms of a lot of the artists who have a lot of popularity on the streaming services, you might not necessarily have heard of.
Right.
I think the example I was reading was an artist called Jones,
right,
who really doesn't sell any records. She struggles to fill large capacity venues.
Is difficult to Google.
Is difficult to Google, yes. She has a very common name.
Yeah.
But she earns a very good regular income stream from the streaming services because her music gets featured in a lot of playlists.
Yeah.
So she gets millions and millions of streams every month. It also sees the big artists like Ed Sheeran making as much money as possible from each individual track. So they'll put out the single version, then an acoustic version, then a remix version. Because
a reggaeton version.
Or whatever, yeah, because each version of the track then gets another 50, 70, 100 million.
And appeals to a different demographic.
And appeals to a different demographic, but it also extends the life of that track. And it just generates a lot more money for a very small cost of doing some sort of minor work on that material.
So as we heard Richard say there, I mean, we've moved from, yeah, tapes, CDs, MP3 players, and now to streaming. And with that, I suppose artists have always had to adapt. But I wonder if the audience has as well. I mean, do you think that it's because of our attention span, or do you think it just comes down to, just the demands of the market?
I would say probably a bit of both, but that's also, I mean, maybe in general, the audience has a shorter attention span, but you also see some artists who are more experimental in their music. Their songs go 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes long, sometimes even longer than that. And I think there is space for that. And I think there are people who are looking for that. It's not always just 3-minute bops that we're looking for.
Let us know what you think. Firstly, I mean, do you prefer longer or shorter songs? Does it matter to you? And also, do you think that artists are shortening their songs because of market requirements? Or does it have anything to do with just the fact that they have shorter attention spans, we have shorter attention spans? That number to WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We were asking you earlier about cleaning up after yourselves in fast food restaurants, and we have gotten a whole slew of messages, actually. Rosman saying, I clean up, and I would insist that my kids also do that. And we have another comment here from Sidek saying, do we clean up our plate when we have dinner at home, or do we let our mum or maid clean it up? It starts from home. I clean up my plate, I place the tray back.
I'd like to think that if you were outside, the social pressures of looking like a good person would push you to actually clean up after yourself.
No, but the problem here is that the peer pressure is reverse, I find. I think that when more people don't clean up, you just end up thinking, I don't know. I mean, I always clean up, but I've been made fun of for it.
I've got some weird looks for it too.
Yeah, so it's a very strange habit that people have. I mean, Suresh says, I clean up after my meal. It's a habit I picked up from living in Adelaide and London in the 80s. And we've got this here from Kwok Ming saying, I clean up whenever possible, but I feel uneasy throwing cups with leftover drinks into the bin. In Amsterdam, they have liquid bins for you to dump leftover drinks and ice. It's next to the trash.
This is not a promotion for Family Mart, but Family Mart also has like a little thing where you can dump the soup and liquids in.
Yes, that's true. Fenny says, yes, I do. My family do as well. I started to clean up the trash and tray since 2000 when I first visited Sydney. So again, someone else influenced by what people do in Australia. And then after which I did the same. And my son, who is 12, has done the same as well since he was 5. I also do some wrap-ups to encourage my circle of friends, especially parents, to lead by example for their kids. Mainly fast food restaurants, unless some vegetarian shops have those pails ready. It is in fact a common practice for people who visit Dharma temples and schools. So lots of people saying that they do clean up, but also a lot of people saying that it began because they went overseas and saw it there. Let us know what your thoughts are. WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at PFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.